Reading 2, page 15 through 30. A Journey to the New World. The Diary of Remember Patience Whipple. Mayflower, 1620. Page 15. October 16, 1620. Mayflower, 1840 miles sailed. Dear Imp, I want to tell you about Hummy and all the others as well. Hummy is short for Humility. Humility Sawyer. Hummy is exactly my age. She was born on the very same day, August 23rd, 1608. Now we have been trying to find out what hour. Ma'am told me that I was born just after midnight on that day. Hummy's mother died shortly before the voyage began, so we cannot ask her, and her father, poor soul, is so melancholy of his wife's death that we dare not say anything to remind him of her. So 'tis a mystery, the hour of Hummy's birth. But it is not as if we were destined to be best friends. There are other things to bond us as well. We both hate spinning and stitchery. We both dared show each other our samplers, and they are both the most horrid messes. Page 16. One can ever imagine. We both love words and to play with them, like the time we made a list of all those ways to say cast. And most fun of all, we have made up nicknames for nearly all of the people on the ship. Our favorite is Commander Shrimp for Captain Miles Standish, because he's so florid in color, and with his bright red hair and small stature, he reminded us so of a shrimp. Hummy and I never met before we arrived in Southampton. That is where she joined the ship. Hummy is not a saint. She be what we call a, quote, stranger, end quote. That is our name for those who are not part of the saints of the holy discipline. We also be called separatists because we separated from the Church of England. Miles Standish is a stranger, too, and so is John Alden, and the Mullinses, and the dreadful Billingtons, though I hate to mention that family with the rest of these souls. For although these people be strangers, they be good folks, I believe, except with the possibility of the Billingtons. In all, we are 102 passengers, with just over 40 of us saints from Leyden. The rest be a few saints and strangers from London and parts of England to the south. The strangers, like Hummy's father, Richard Sawyer, did not come for religion, but for a chance to make a better living. Page 17. My own dear mother and father came for all good reasons, first and foremost religion. In Holland, Sabbath was becoming a sore point to my parents, for indeed the Dutch thought of it as a day of pleasure, quote, unbridled frolicking, unquote, were Mom's words. Oh, they went to church, but then they played. Children went about rolling hoops and howling and turning cartwheels. In the winter, they would have skating races on the canals on the Sabbath day. And it wasn't just the Sabbath day that was the problem. When an English girl, who lived right down the street from us, married a Dutch boy, well, my parents were shocked most awfully. But the one single thing that really made up my parents' mind about leaving Holland was Blessing, my baby sister. She is just 2 1/2 now, but about 6 months ago, when she was 2, or a bit under, guess what her first words after Mama were? Danku, which means thank you in Dutch. Ma'am had handed her some bread smeared with honey, and Blessing reached out with her chubby little hands and said, Danku, Mama. Well, that was it. You would have thought our dear little Blessing had spoken a curse. Ma'am nearly fainted, and I remember looking at Mother as she stared at this little baby. It was all written right there on her face. Visions of her children marrying, page 18, Dutchmen, going to churches with organ music, giving birth to little bishops or something. It was only a few short months later that we sailed for England, and here we be. And we are not just saints and not just strangers, but I better like the word Master William Bradford did make for us. We all are pilgrims. 2 nights ago he used that word when he offered a prayer of thanksgiving for the successful repair of the beam. He said, quote, although we have our differences, we are all God's children. And as such we be but specks in the vastness of this ocean, but precious unto our Lord, and now together we are voyagers, pilgrims, and look to thine infinite mercy and providence. I like the thought of Hummy and myself no longer just being saints and strangers, for those two words doth pull us apart. 'Tis better to find a word that brings us together and might fit us both, and the word that does that is pilgrim. That is all for now, Imp. I must go help Ma'am with Blessing. Love, Ma'am. P.S. Did I tell you that Hummy has such a dear little face? Her hair is slightly red, like cinnamon, and she has round little cheeks and a round little chin. It is as if she is made from all circles and then sprinkled with freckles. Page 19. Later that same day. Dear Imp, I have to write you twice today. I am almost incredulous, but my gentle ma'am came close to losing her temper with Elder Brewster. For some time, ma'am has been complaining to Father that she thinks William Brewster is too vivid in his language when he describes the horrors of King James and his awful bishops. Now this evening we have been having our supper down below, just finishing a few bites of salt horse and the hardtack, when the Brewster's young son asked his father some questions, and it makes William Brewster remember his dear friend from his college days, who were indeed killed by the bishops for wanting to make the church pure. How were they killed? The boy asked. Hanged and worse, Elder Brewster replied darkly. I felt ma'am, who was sitting beside me, flinch. They were first thrown in jail for a long, long time, and left in filth and half-starved to rot. Then they were brought out to be hanged. And, said the Brewster child, and all the children were leaning forward to listen. But ma'am, page 20, just seemed almost frozen beside me, despite blessings wriggling in her lap. And, he spoke slowly, just when they had a few breaths of life still in them, they cut them down. Their bellies were cut open, their guts drawn out, and burning coals put in their bowels. That is what the bishops do. Mere killing is not enough. Well, ma'am, who had been sitting still as a stone, suddenly jumped up with blessing in her arms. Elder Brewster, she spoke through clenched teeth, this is not conversation for children, nor for anyone sitting at the table of the Lord partaking in the nourishment he hath provided. We do not want our children's sleep to be troubled with nightmares. One could have heard a pin drop, despite the creaking and moaning of the ship's timbers. William Brewster jumped up and glared at Mother, but I saw John Alden smiling gently at her, and then I saw Commander Shrimp give a fierce look toward Elder Brewster, and I tell you the Shrimp tells some pretty strong stories himself. I think ma'am spoke truthfully in what she said. I was proud of her, but it is most uncommon and unheard of for a woman to speak out thusly, and it disturbed me the way Elder Brewster glared at her, for after all he is the ruling elder of the Green Gate congregation, from which we all come in Leyden. Page 21. It does frighten me, and now maybe instead of the nightmares about how they did hang and quarter those men, I might be having others. I shall not forget, Imp, the glare in his eyes, and how my mother did not flinch one bit, but boldly met his eyes. Good night, Imp. Love again, Mem. October 17th, 1620. Mayflower. 1,890 miles sailed. Dear Imp, it is starting to blow fierce again, but so far I feel not a twinge of the queasies. Captain Standish said I looked pert when several others were casting, and I was trying to help out. I do think that, perhaps, at last both Humming and I are used to the roll and the violent pitches, for she is feeling quite fit, too. Master Jones says that we both got our sea legs now. Master Jones is very nice, but the rest of the crew is most awful. In particular, there is one especially profane sailor. He is the one who calls us puke stockings and goes about bullying all of the saints. Page 22. And making fun of our prayers, cursing us to kingdom come. He speaks often of throwing half of us overboard, and then there is the foul-mouthed old boatswain. He be not condemning us, but the mighty oaths he does roar at the monkeys in the riggings, whew, it's enough to make your ears bleed, says Will Booten. As awful as these sailors be, I cannot imagine having to go up into the riggings in those gale-force winds to shorten sails. Hummy and I and Will B. peeked out of a hatch and watched two sailors go up to haul in the topsails. 'Tis a scarifying sight. I tell you, as we watched, for they must swing into the ratlines between the riggings. The ratlines are like rope ladders. Then they climb hand over hand to the topsail yard. And once there comes the worst part of all, for they have to swing out onto the foot ropes to start adjusting the sails. There's nothing between them and death but air, a few ropes, and howling wind. They must do this in blizzards and rain, and often in the pitch black of night. There they were, holding on for dear life, yet trying to work at the same time.
high above the deck of this wildly pitching ship. They could have been flung from the riggings into the deep at any moment. Hummy and I didn't know a topsail from a mizzen when we first came aboard, but Will, he knows everything there is to know about sailing ships. Page 23. It must be admitted, 'tis not an easy life these sailors have. Still, they should be nicer to us, and not cheer every time we puke. Yes, they often do that. 'Tis hard to write with all this pitching, but I should tell you a bit about Will Burton. He is Deacon Samuel Fuller's servant. Deacon Fuller is also our surgeon, and he does much cutting and bleeding, and Will helps him with it. But Will says it does give him the queasies, and he has to fight to keep his eyes open because he cannot stand the sight of blood. Always a cheerful word, and oftentimes he helps the woman with the babies. He has a gentle and calm way about him, and he knows ever so many finger games that he plays with the babies. Blessings just takes to him so. He'd be a few years older than Hummy and me, but we all like the same things, and he likes our word games, and especially the nicknames we think up. One last word before I stop. Guess who the bilge warders, or the bilges, as we sometimes call them, are. Tomorrow I shall reveal their true identity. Love, Mem. Page 24, October 18th, 1620, Mayflower, 1900 miles sailed. Dear Imp, there's a lull in the storm, so I write, but I do not believe the storm is over. There was too much fury for it to blow itself out so quickly. The bilge waters, as I promised. William Bradford told my father they are the profanest of families he has ever encountered. The children are as unruly and nasty as they come. They snitch, and they bedevil the two dogs on board. Well, not the big mastiff, but the spaniels that belong to one passenger. Hummy and I are just waiting for them to get bit. You can tell something of character about children who mistreat dogs. That was our first clue about the bilge children. And then they are always trying to peek where they shouldn't, including under our petticoats. Hummy and I were sitting on some barrels the other day, just dangling our feet, when John Alden came along to check on the barrels, and then he suddenly yanks up little Francis, who'd been hiding under some ropes and canvases just by the barrels, staring right up our dresses. John Alden gave him a good cuff. I hear the wind coming round again. I'll write fast now. There are 30 children in all. The youngest is an infant. Some are from England, and some are saints like us. Page 25. From Holland. Some, like Will Button and the more children, are orphans and travel as servants for other families. There is also Priscilla Mullins, but she be 18, not really a child. However, Hummy and I love Priscilla, and she is most beautiful. We call her Lark, short for Larkspur, because that is her favorite flower, and she has very blue eyes. There be one child that I wish dearly was on board, and that is the son of William and Dorothy Bradford. His parents feared too much for his safety on this crossing, and planned to send for him later. There is not a soul aboard the vessel who, when we were departing from Holland for Southampton, did not have their hearts seared by the terrible and frightening cries coming from that child on the pier as he saw his mother and father pull away in the ship. Nor will anyone ever forget the grief carved so deeply in Dorothy Bradford's face. She has hardly spoken a word for this entire passage, and appears more melancholy than Hummy's father. I do not know what I should have done if mother and father had left me and Blessing behind. I would think I should rather die. Must stop now. Storm back with full force, but no queasies. Love, Mem. Page 26. October 21st, 1620, Mayflower. Dear Imp, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh. Then he giveth and taketh back again. 'Tis the best way to sum up the last day as the storm still rages. First John Howland was swept overboard. He came topside and was scrubbed right off the deck. 'Twas several minutes before he was hauled in with a boat hook, but the sailing master reported that he went under the water some fathoms during the course. The Lord, however, gave him back to us. And just whilst he was swirling in those crashing waves, Mistress Hopkins collapsed and has gone into labor, her child coming early, with a jolly little baby boy who looks none the worse for wear, having been born between the gasps of a raging gale. I, for one, found his squalls most pleasant after the shrieks of the storms. During this time, that very proud and profanest of the sailors, The one who called us all puke stockings began indeed himself to cast blood. Toward morning of this day, he dies, and the men take his body topside and slide him over the rails. Is it not odd that the man who threatened to throw half of us overboard is, in fact, the first to go? Page 27. I wonder what they shall name the new babe. Good night. Love, Mammy. October 23rd, 1620, Mayflower. 2160 miles south. Dear Aunt, Master and Mistress Hopkins have decided to name the boat Baby Oceanus. I think it is a good name, but I am not sure that had I been born on board this ship, I might not have preferred the name Atlanticus. Atlanticus has the sound of the storm waves that crashed against the hull, and this infant was born not in a lull, but within the heart of a full Atlantic gale, and he be crying like fury as I write. Love, Mem. Page 28, October 24, 1620, Mayflower, 2210 miles sailed. Dear Imp, storming is blowing itself out, but I am occupied with many unsettled feelings and worries about sundry things. Perhaps if I make a list, it will help. I do not like the shadow of fear looking about. I shall bring them into the light. 1. I did not like the way Elder Brewster looked at Mam as she prepared our supper over the coals tonight. I believe he is still angry with her for telling him to mind his tongue. 2. Hummy's father, Master Sawyer, grows more melancholy by the day. This is very hard on Hummy. He never speaks to her, and I'm sure she'd be missing her mother as well as he. 3. Dear Will B. is looking quite poorly, and when I walked by him, I found him sleeping at this usual hour and looking quite feverish. That be a list of my worries. Love, Mem. Page 29. October 27th, 1620, Mayflower. 2340 miles sailed. Dear Imp, Will B. appears truly not well at all, and Hummy and I cannot understand why Deacon Fuller does not give him more attention. We fetch him water and try to get a piece of biscuit or a bite of oatmeal down him. Sometimes he is near delirious and calling out for his ma'am. Now think you not the Fullers could take a little more time with him as he is their servant? Not that Hummy or I mind, but we are all doing what we can, and it seems not enough. After all, the Deacon Fuller is a doctor, and they are the upgrowns. I told Hummy that I am going to go to Deacon and ask for a draught for Will to ease his sleep and these terrible nightmare deliriums that seem to seize him. Love, Mem. Page 30. October 28th, 1620, Mayflower. 2,400 miles sailed. Dear Imp, I am so mad I could boil. I went to Deacon Fuller and asked for a draught for Will B., and he says he only has a bit left and cannot spare it to save for an emergency. This is an emergency, I think. But I dare not say it, for I know children must not talk back. So I just whisper in a small little voice that I'm not proud of. Well, Will is fevered, fiercely sick, and does not have more awful visions in his fevers. And guess what this horrid man says to me? Profane visions are the result of a profane lie. Has nothing to do with the fever. I'd be stunned. He has treated that terrible sailor who has died a few days before. Was he comparing our dear Will to that man who had called down curses upon all of us, threatening, in fact, to throw us overboard? I am silent, but I think to myself, maybe this man, who is a deacon and a surgeon, is really nothing more than a butcher. And I know this for certain. Will Button is not a profane being, and his deliriums ride on his fever and not else. Love, men.